Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Jared.
And welcome to the Fixate and Binge podcast, where we discuss our fixation with films and television by digging deep into the themes and messages that transcend entertainment.
And offer our insights and analysis into what makes something worth your time and binge-worthy right now. Here we go. Welcome, everybody, to the Fixate and Binge podcast. I'm Jared.
And I'm Joe.
We are so happy that you joined us again. Thanks for being with us. We have a very special guest all the way from Bangkok, Thailand. It is about 9:30 in the morning his time, and we are on with him live right now. His name is Vidya Pongsarimong. I knew I'd mess that up.
You want me to help you?
Yeah.
Vidya Pongsarimong.
Okay.
We're pathetic. I'm sorry. I've been friends with multiple Thai nationals, and I've always seen that their names are very long compared to an American name. And everybody that I've ever known has nicknames. So your nickname we hear is Poo. So forgive me if I just take the easy route, but we welcome Poo Vidya onto the program.
Awesome.
Swadhi krap.
Oh, you know, think of Poo as a Winnie the Pooh, then you feel more comfortable.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm familiar.
We are so happy to have you here. Before we get started into our questions, Joe has a public service announcement for all parents out there, a bit of wisdom that he wants to slice off and just dish out for free here.
I only mention it because this podcast discusses our enduring love of films and television. My children, and I have three children. I have a 19-year-old. He's not really a child, but I have a 19-year-old son, a 15-year-old daughter, and a 9-year-old daughter. And like a lot of parents, whenever school is out, they stare at their cell phones or they're on the computer. They don't do anything together. And when they do anything together, when they have to do something together, they're usually arguing or fighting or creating problems. And eventually, my wife and I got frustrated getting texts and phone calls while at work that the three of them couldn't get along. So I decided, here's your punishment. I forced all three of them to watch the extended edition of Peter Jackson's The Lord of the Rings.
There you go.
All three films. And that when I come home from work, they have to each answer quiz questions about the films. And at first they were frustrated, but today they finished the last film, Return of the King, and they loved it.
All right.
That my children, my kids, not all of them are little children, they spent a wonderful almost dozen hours together, finally doing something together, and they loved it. So the power of cinema can change lives.
So the next time your kids are acting up, just give them a TV. That's the message.
That's the message, yeah. Don't go out and play, kids. Just put them in front of a TV.
All right. Well, let's jump into this. We are so happy to have you on. Thank you for taking the time to talk with us. A couple of doofuses in America that just want to get to know people in cinema from all around the world. And we're really happy to have you. So, Joe, you want to start off?
Sure. Yeah. I want to jump into it. And I know we have a lot of questions, but I want to be respectful of your time, Poo. I became familiar with your work, I suspect, like a lot of Americans did, through Nicholas Winding Refn's Only God Forgives back in 2013, starring, of course, Ryan Gosling and Kristen Scott Thomas. I have been a Nicholas Winding Refn fan ever since I came across his work, from Bronson to Valhalla Rising to Neon Demon. I love his style, and I've loved his work, and I love Drive, of course. I saw that in the big screen. I loved that film. And so when I learned that Ryan Gosling and Nicholas Winding Refn were teaming up to make another film together, I was fully invested. And that is when I came across you. And as fantastic as Ryan Gosling is, and as fantastic an actress as Kristen Scott Thomas is, you haunted my dreams. I could not. I was terrified and in awe of your character, and I have not stopped thinking about it. When I think of your character, and I know I'll get to a question here, I think of your character. I think of One Eye, played by Mads Mikkelsen in Valhalla Rising. I think of Anton Chigurh in No Country for Old Men. I think of these unstoppable, silent,
and terrifying
figures that kind of leap out of our imagination. That was your character, Chang. And okay, monologue over, but I really want to know, how did you happen to be in this film? Can you speak to that for us?
It was a very interesting journey. I don't know, you know, I didn't feel the question that you guys have prepared before is also how did I get into act. But, you know, I'm a latecomer. What I mean by that, I became an actor at the age of 50, and I never acted before.
Okay.
That's very unique.
And it was by accident that I was discovered by a cinema photographer named Wade Muller, who's an Australian photographer, VP working in Thailand, that saw me in drinking beer in a bar and asked if I want to be... Well, it's a good place to become an actor, right?
That's great.
So I think we need to hang out in bars more often.
And he thought I was a policeman. He thought I was an undercover police. And I was sitting drinking beer with one of his good friends who's a model and actor. And somehow, you know, he asked my friend, and my friend said, no, he's not a policeman. And then Wade said, I'm doing a short film and I need somebody to play a police. So that's how I started. I did a short film and playing a policeman. And then after that, at the age of 50, I decided to become a Buddhist monk.
Oh.
I shaved my head, wearing a saffron robe, stay in the monastery for weeks, you know, just to clear my mind, do meditation. When I finished my being monk, I received a phone call from a producer by the name Tom Waller, who you will hear his name a lot because he directed two of my films. He said, hey, I'm producing this Hollywood project. It's like, you know, one of those, like a straight to DVD, you know, Wade said you can act and you come and cast for it. That was how I started to become an actor. It's just like I went to the casting, read the script. I didn't do a good job, but then they gave me the chance to kind of work on the character and blah, blah, blah. So I got a part in that film. And then after that, Tom said to me, hey, you know what? I saw you. I like you. Can you act in one of my films that I want to direct? And the film was called Mindfulness and Murder. And this is how I want to tell you how the domino effect happened from a short film to that, you know, straight to DVD movie, you know, and then go to the Thai film called Mindfulness and Murder. And my character was Father Ananda, who used to be a homicide detective police. And he is also a monk. So I had to act as a monk again after, you know, after I was just being a real monk, and it was, you know, it's a crime thriller. You have to investigate a murder case in the temple. It was quite a controversial film. And we were so worried because in Thailand, you know, this is a very taboo kind of subject to talk about monks and, you know, about murder and drug dealer. But surprisingly, the film was nominated for 5 national awards, including Best Actor, which is, I was... My first Thai film, I was nominated for Best Actor.
Congratulations. That's exciting.
Thank you. But with that film, you know, I was so happy. I said to myself, hey, you know, in a year, I have a short film. I have a straight-to-DVD American movie. And I have this Thai film. And then, you know, I have this DVD. And I said, okay, I'm going to keep this, you know, 3 movie in my life. I'm done. Then I got a call from... A casting director said, hey, you know, Pooh, Danish director is coming to Thailand to cast some character for his new project. I was thinking about you. Can you come and cast for it? I said, yeah, sure, you know. And then the first thing she asked me, show me how you can cut people's arm. And then this is how we got into that. And then she said, and can you sing a karaoke? I said, of course, you know, one of my favorite songs was Take Me Home Country Road. So during the casting, I had this PVC pipe and I practiced cutting people. And then I sang Take Me Home Country Road. And then I told her, I said, hey, I have this DVD that of the Thai movie that I did called Mindfulness and Murder. Can you pass this to the director as well? So that's how it started, Holy God Forgives, because that was actually the character of Chang that I went and cast for it. But at that time, Nicholas was shooting Drive. And then after Drive, he won Best Director in Cannes. Ryan Gosling went to do a movie called Gangster Squad, if I recall. So it takes almost 2 years from when I start casting for Chang. And when Nicholas decided that, you know, he's coming back to do Only God Forgives in Thailand, he said to the casting director, who was too big? I mean, I was heavy. I was 103 kilograms at that time. So without any hesitation, I went straight to the gym and working out almost every day. And I had lost 23 kilograms to prepare for that. You know, also including learning how to do Thai boxing. So when I met with Nicholas, you know, we were talking. He asked me interesting question. And then he, you know, found out one thing about that totally changed the concept of Chang in the original script. That I meant by the weapon that Chang used in Only God Forgives, which is a traditional Thai sword. He found out that I practiced the arts of Japanese fencing called Kendo for over 35 years. Wow. And so he said, hey, Poo, are we going to change the weapon? It's supposed to be an axe, and now you're going to use the sword. I said, okay, great. I will use the sword. So that's
perfect.
You see Chang carry sword in Only God Forgives. So how to become Chang's character? You know, my first American straight-to-DVD movie, my character was a king. I was a policeman. I was a king. I was, you know, maybe a taxi driver in other movies. But when Nicholas told me, he said, hey, Pooh, in this film, you be God. I said, okay, that was interesting.
And not a benevolent God either.
And I thought of a lot of God, and when he said, you're the God of vengeance. And, you know, in Thai mythology or story, you know, we have also, you know, belief in good karma and bad karma. Mm-hmm. So I understand exactly, especially when the story is based in a very traditional method, thinking method of Thai culture, you know, about people getting punishment because they did something wrong. And the punisher is his duty. It's not that he do because he has some hate or anger about the person that he punished. So Nicholas would try to convince me all the time, Pooh, you're God, you're God. Right before we started to shoot, he would come, you know, stand next to my ear and he whisper into my ear, you know, Pooh, you're God, you're God. So with that kind of energy that Nicholas kind of giving to me, and so I can feel that I'm in control. So that's why the character, when you see him, the other thing was that I got a call back. Actually, you know, after Drive, they were kind of almost like a recast or re-audition, you know, like now they're looking for somebody who can really play this character, you know?
Yeah.
So I have to kind of recast again for Chang character. And interesting enough, the same casting director said to me, she said, Nicholas want you to be like a statue.
That makes sense.
So when he said that, immediately I understood. Interesting, because it's a very challenging task for you know, the directors to say, hey, I want you to be a statue. You mean frozen, freeze? Or what I mean by statue is that, you know, like in Thailand, we have a lot of Buddha statues. When you go into the temple, you pray to Lord Buddha, you look at the statue, you already feel like the power that come out from that statue, you know. Mm-hmm. And plus, you know, 35, 37 years in Kendo, when we spar or we fight, you don't even have to do anything. But by standing in your position, your opponent can feel, you know, kind of power, and they will fear of your appearance. Mm-hmm. So I use a lot of that technique from being in, you know, Kendo. Plus, you know, the fact that I'm Buddhist and I do a lot of meditation, and I, you know, I believe in the spiritual power. So it's a combination of everything put together to create Chang. And that's why Chang is so unique, because you don't see this character in any other film after Only God Forgives.
Well, you mentioning him that he wanted you to act like a statue. Mm-hmm. It makes total sense, because you had very few spoken parts in that film. A couple singing parts. You sung some karaoke. I think a couple very short spoken sentences. But tell me about the challenge of acting with very little to no dialogue compared to a dialogue part. What's the difference? How difficult is one or the other compared to each other?
I try to think about child character, the one without dialogue, is that if you look at a volcano and you know that inside the volcano, it has all this thing that is building up, ready to explode.
Right.
That energy, you have to be able to create that. And in Kendo, it's called ki. You have to have your ki. You have to have your breathing. You have to have your, you know, driving force that it takes years to develop. And I think for me, that was my advantage, you know, in terms of sending out the power. And it's also, I think, when you have that power, they said, that belief that you are so powerful, you know.
Right.
You and other people can sense it. You know, you don't even have to say the word and people feel like, oh my God, I don't want to look at his eyes.
Because it was perfectly conveyed.
So that's important. And, you know, I don't blink. In the movie, I don't blink, you know. And people feel like, oh my God, this character is interesting. I remember when they were showing at Cannes International Film Festival, I went for an interview and there were four reporters waiting for me, and they were so afraid of me after they saw the film, you know. And I have to remind myself to keep smiling all the time, because if I don't smile, when I go out on the, you know, when I go to restaurant, when I go buy, you know, buy rice, I just, hi, auntie, you know.
Otherwise, people might think they're in danger.
Yeah, my student in kendo class always tell me, you know, people, you're so nice, you know. And then when you start doing sparring, you're so scary.
As you were explaining your movements and how you moved throughout that role in that film, this is out of left field. When I was living in Hawaii, I once flew to Kauai, another island, and I spent an afternoon watching and following Tiger Woods as he golfed. This was many years ago, over 20 years ago. And the way that Tiger Woods walked between the holes, it was just unusual. It was like every muscle in his body was perfectly honed. His posture, his movements, it was all very deliberate. There was nothing loose. And that is what reminded me of your character in this film, the way you move. It is, you're in no hurry. You have kind of a Michael Myers stalker move. But everything is very deliberate and you're in no hurry. It's almost like, yeah, justice is coming. You can run, but you can't hide, but it's coming. And your movements throughout, again, taking nothing away from Ryan Gosling and these other big actors, you didn't have to say anything to command presence. And that was the thing that came through in your performance more than anything. Mm-hmm. You could have been given a huge monologue and it wouldn't have made much difference to me. You had presence from the moment you entered these scenes. And that's just a general observation. One of the things I really liked that Nicholas made in this film, it was a directorial style decision. If I'm not mistaken, after every act of violence that your character Chang commits, you then sing in the karaoke bar afterwards, almost like to cleanse the rage out of you.
Exactly. I like that, Joe. That I think it was a good observation. And if we even talk about that during the preparation of the film, is that every time that Chang, you know, make his judgment, you know, or he execute someone, he needs to go back into his, to purify himself, or to release all that that sadness or something through the song. It's almost like a ritual. And same with his team. You could see that when his team watching Chang, you know, they go back, they're almost like they're watching. So karaoke is a part of cleansing, a part of reset his spirit, his energy, you know.
Wow. Exactly what you're that doing. That is an interesting, I would call it a ritual, a ritual cleansing of sorts. And I'm wondering, regarding rituals, as you prepare for a role or even just a day of shooting on the set, Do you have rituals to get yourself into the mindset of your character or into whatever frame of mind you need to be to perform the way you need to do?
My rituals start from the day that piece of paper called script was put right in front of me. My ritual came the day that either the casting or anybody from the production called and said, hey, we have this project. I prepare myself way back. My ritual is that I'm so into my character, the minute that I smell that story coming, that movie's coming, I go and, you know, like I said, I went to find every Nicholas Winding Refn film. That thing about it, you're in Bangkok, okay? And Nicholas is not a big name here, right? I mean, if you're in Europe or you're in America or you're movie geeks like, you guys, you said, I saw, you know, Avatar Horizon, I saw Bronson, blah, blah, blah. And for me, I don't even know who Nicholas Winding Refn was when, you know, the phone rang. And I went to, like, you know, search Bangkok for all his movies. Pusher 1, Pusher 2, Pusher 3, Bahar Horizon, you know, Bronson, blah, blah, blah. And I watch everything. And I look at myself, like, oh my God, how am I going to top all this character that he already created?
Well, therefore, you did it perfectly.
Like I said, guys, I'm a latecomer. At 50, I started. It was 15 years ago. I came late, but I don't want to be late. What I mean is that I don't know how other people work. I find my own way to work. You know, in Kendo we have this exercise called saburi, which is just to cut the sword down. You know, and this is a basic to build muscle and rhythm. And this is saburi. It's just to cut one time, one perfect time. When you practice, but people practice saburi 100,000, 10,000 times just to do one perfect cut. And I treat it the same way I do martial arts. I read, you know, English is my second language. You know, I make sure that I understand the script. I make sure I understand the character. I take character study beyond. You know, I write script down on the, I carry index card. I write all my, this is my ritual. My ritual is that everything that I prepare myself not to screw up on set, not to waste people time, and to do my best and to make sure that on the monitor, I got what I come to do. You know, I don't look at monitor. If they don't ask me to come and say, hey, Poo, I want you to move left and right. When they say cut, I'm saying, let's do it again. And that's one thing also. If you want to hear this, with Nicholas Winding Refn, 30 takes, is nothing.
30?
Really?
That's a lot of takes.
40 takes.
Wow. That's a lot of material to edit.
He always said, who is perfect? Let's do it again. Oh, great, guys. It's perfect. Let's do it again. 30 takes, 40
to
takes.
To get the absolute perfect of perfect.
So for me to, after only God forgive, if I go to any set and it goes 5 takes, I said, that's it. Give me more. You know, I don't complain. If it's 10 takes, I don't complain. 20 takes, just keep doing it, you know. At the most, we work 13 hours, guys. You can do 100 takes, no problem. Why? I always feel grateful, guys, to be an actor at the age of 50. I would never complain about being in front of the camera or on set. There are 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 people who want to be doing what I'm doing. And I'm so grateful that I always used
to do it. Well, it sounds like to me that you must be a director's dream to work with, given your discipline and your focus on perfection. And you say you came late to this profession, but I would say you came at just the right time when all of your training, all of your life experience prepared you perfectly for the roles that you have been able to find. Look, I've seen you in Only God Forgives, and I watched 3 of the 4 episodes of
Hurts Like Hell.
And just for our listeners, Hurts Like Hell is on Netflix. It's streaming right now. You can access it. It is a deep dive into the world of Muay Thai or Thai boxing. It's a documentary, but it's dramatized and with actual people speaking about their experiences. And Poo plays he plays a referee. And I think your role as the referee kind of mimics your role as Chang, because you don't say a whole lot and you don't need to, because you have authority and you have power and you convey that so well that everybody knows what you're thinking and what you're doing with just a glance of an eye. And especially in the role of Chang, I'm with Joe. That was a terrifying figure. That was a really scary dude. I would not want to have to tangle with him.
You know, I'm glad that you see that. And that's, for me, I don't want to say this technique, but for me, again, back to martial art, it's about, you have to respect the audience, guys. You know, you cannot just say, hey, this, I love cooking. I'm a crazy chef. For 38 years of my marriage, my wife only make reservations. I cook. And for me, nowadays, people are so used to the fast food. You know, when you see a movie, you want to know everything in like 15 seconds. But in life, you know, it doesn't take that fast to cook a dish. It takes a lot of preparation. It takes a lot of, you know, a lot of creativity. So in acting is as well, that as much as you want to give everything that you know about the story, because as an actor, you're a storyteller. You want to tell the audience and the people who are watching it what's happening. But if you hold it, you don't give it out and make them curious and want to know more, or even don't tell them, it's become even more effective and more powerful. And it doesn't take long. It takes maybe not even 3 seconds of holding your breath and release it. And that's what you see also in Only God Forgives. You know, Chang doesn't give you exactly what you want. Yes, it will be, it's exactly what you're thinking, but you're not going to get it at that moment that you want it.
Yeah.
You know, the same thing as, you know, Virat in Hurts Like Hell. You know, a lot of things, you want to take the audience into the journey in the character's mind, what they're thinking. Let them have fun. You know, take the audience along with you. Not just like, you know, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is what you're going to have to see. But I think that's one thing that when you have that ability to involve your audience with you, they feel that they are part of your character. You see, they don't feel that you and the audience are two different persons. You know, you, and especially, right. You know, in, like, you know, when, I think in one, at one point in Only God Forgives, at the karaoke song, Chang was crying as he's singing. You could have, you know, I was crying with that song. I was quite emotional. And after, you know, we didn't show much in the film, but after I cry and I just keep crying, and Nicholas never said cut. So I just keep crying. I just keep going. And I think, you know, when, again, in other movies, my job is to get the audience become involved with my character. You know, that's a lot of people, they don't care about that. They care about themselves, but they don't care about who are watching. And the fact that I was discovered by a cameraman, I want to say that I dance with cameraman on set. You know, I feel like when I work, when you say that, you know, I move like this, like that, I'm tango. I'm doing tango with my cameraman. I want the cameraman to be so satisfying that after it said cut, he looked at me and he go, oh, thank you, Pooh, that was great. Why? Yeah. Because through the lens, through the eyes of the cameraman, that's the audience. People don't think like that, but I do, because
that's a good point. Yeah.
You know, the whole theater looking at the screen, look at you. And where are you looking at? Who are you trying to connecting with? So for me, I go straight into the mind of the cameraman. I want to tell him the story because he's the first hand. He's the first audience to me.
That's very true. He's the one seeing how it looks, how we would see it. So yeah, that makes perfect sense.
There are actors that will spend decades in the film or TV industry and not get what you just explained to us about the importance of being mindful of your audience. The fact that you essentially show up at 50 and you grasp this is astounding, because there are too many instances where actors are just there for the paycheck. And I'm just really, it's kind of going on top of what Jared said earlier, all of your life's experiences, at 50 is the perfect age. You are, I don't want to say you have no room to grow, obviously, but you were perfectly ready for the right moment. and all of your experiences have created this such an awareness and an intelligence with everything. And of course, I think the challenge with Only God Forgives, and I think it challenged a lot of its critics, is that the minimal dialogue. One of the things, I wrote a review of this. I mean, I'll try and post it on our Instagram page later, but I wrote a review of this, and the review is saying, you know, now that I'm more familiar with Nicholas Winding Refn's film work, he tells his stories visually. And when his actors don't have a lot to say, they are saying an awful lot without moving their mouth. And that's one of the things. I mean, you may not have had a lot to say in this film. You didn't need to. I think your quiet, menacing presence in this film spoke volumes without even uttering a word. And that's, there are so many actors that will go their whole careers and never grasp that. And you've just done it so well.
Well, I also learned from, I have a lesson that I've learned as well. I also, you know, before Only God Forgive, when I live in Bangkok. Before I used to live in the States for many years. I went to study in New York, lived there for 8 years. I came back to Thailand with my American, who's now Thai, wife. She's a ballerina. She's a dancer. Okay. We have a dance school in Bangkok for the last 28 years, a ballet school.
Wow.
When they knew that I, you know, I can act a lot of movie, they cast me for, you know, different parts. You know, not that I get cast in every film that I went for, but I remember one time I went to cast for this film, and they want somebody to play a bad guy. That was before Only God Forgives. And I think I did a good job during the casting call, you know. But I didn't get the job. I didn't get the part. Hmm. And very rarely I ask casting director, you know, and people feel awkward to say, oh, you know what? Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't get a part, but can you tell me why? You know, you don't do that. I think in the States, you don't call the casting director. But in Thailand, it's the Thai people, we treat each other like brother, sister. You know, we respect each other. And there's a casting director that I felt very comfortable with her. So I just said to her, "That, you know, can you please tell me? I mean, you know, I just like to know so that I can learn about what I did or, you know, what I should do next time." And she said, "You know, the director loves you. But when you came to do this bad guy thing, you try too much to be the bad guy.
Oh.
You, without saying anything, you already look like a bad guy. People are already
a compliment? Afraid. I'm not sure.
You know what? The reason I went back to when Red Mullen saw me and thought I was a policeman. When I go to some clubs, they close the club. They thought I was coming to do an investigation. Or something. I there's something about an authority figure in me before. I mean, you know, before I have all this facial hair. That, you know, that's why I'm always playing, you know, like an officer, prime minister. You know, I did the president of Indonesia in a movie before. You know, I was like, you know, an executioner. Another great movie that I did.
The Last Executioner, right?
Of course, you know, I cannot. I haven't done much of the comedy, but with this kind of character that I have, I try to enhance it. I try to make that it's more effective. Like, you know, people try to, I don't want people to feel like every time they see me in a movie, they think of Chang. I try to change my character, you know, that it's still some ingredient you see, but I don't want to be a typecast as Chang all the time. So I try to.
Yeah, that's an important thing. You don't get stuck in the same kind of roles, or your chances for expansion are limited because people only see you as one type of character.
Especially when there's so many other opportunities and so many, there's a universe of fascinating roles out there. Pooh, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the film industry in Thailand. I am not very familiar with Thai films or Thai television, obviously. But do you feel that films set in Thailand that we get here in the States fairly portray Thai culture? Because when I see films set in Thailand, it's either Hangover 2, which you were in, or maybe it was Danny Boyle's
Bravely Before Dawn,
yeah.
You know, the jail thing.
which was really gritty. I almost finished it. The Prayer Before Dawn, we see like kind of the underbelly, the seedy underworld of Thailand. And yes, you get that in Only God Forgives. I mean, do you feel that is fairly portraying Thai or Bangkok or Thai culture to American audiences?
You know what? I think with this type of, you know, the underworld, whatever, you know, that you saw in film, I think it's everywhere, you know, not just only Bangkok, but I think, yes, that's, it's one very, how do you say, very, it's a selling point, but it's, you know, in terms of movie, we tend to make it too dramatic, you know, but, you know, and also, of course, I try to say to people, you know, when like, again, we talk about Only God Forgives again, is that, you know, when people see Bangkok in a different way, of course, it's a bit scary. You know, it looks like it's a crime city, but actually it's a beautiful city.
But I've again, been there multiple times, and I love it.
Yeah, but we're not going to let people think that, you know, this like Bangkok's like a postcard, you know. But I'm telling you, it's one of the safest city in the world, you know. We talk about crime rate or whatever. Yeah. But there's some uniqueness about it. That's why, you know, you see when, you know, you, I always say that, you know, if there's no Thai boxing, there's no the tuk tuk, which is our, you know, three model, you know, taxi.
Motor taxis.
There's no agogo bar. I would lose my job. You know, it's nobody who comes to Thailand to film. But beside that, we have, beautiful locations, beautiful, you know, natural resources, and the production team are excellent. I think the reason people come to Thailand also that they don't have to bring, like, you know, an airplane full of, you know, their team to come to Thailand. They bring key people to come here. The rest, we have very skillful people ready to provide the service that, you know, your film would, the level of your film to go up to the high standard.
I would love to see more positive stories about Thailand. I know they're there. Somebody's got to come along and introduce Western audiences to a more positive messaging about Thailand, because I agree with you. And it's not just the food. It's not just the culture. I think it's going to be, I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, but in Thailand, of course, you know, we have a studio type movie that show, you know, the one that, the few good movie that's always, you know, there, you know, of course we have some action. They're always a comedy, action, a cross-dresser movie, and a ghost movie that do good sales. Yeah. You know? But of course, when you talk about the underworld, the dark side is more dramatic. It's about life, hard life, which is, you know, also is in the society as well. And there's something also that even though you see the dark side is giving out the message, you know, why every Chinese movie that has to do with, you know, drugs or human trafficking has to shoot in Thailand? Because it actually has happened, you know, and people need to know about it. And that's it. It's a part of, you know, you look at even in the States, you know, all the movies, you don't have car exploded or people shooting, you know, cinema is more than that. You know, that's why also more than a lot of my film is controversial, you know, and has an impact with people. But again, we are right now on my next project, we're doing something different also that you guys will hear about it very soon. And it's a musical.
Oh, very good.
So my first time to do a musical, which is also shot in Thailand with Thai cast using beautiful location of Thailand, but in English and has English music.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that. See that. That's going to be great.
It's called Dreams.
Awesome. It's called Dreams?
Yes, yes. And it's going to be a Christmas movie.
Christmas movie, okay.
Like 2024?
Probably, hopefully the 2024 you will have a chance to see it, yes.
Okay, good. Okay, so from an American perspective, of course we have the might and power of Hollywood, which is world renowned. And it seems that from the Hollywood's perspective, Thailand is a location. It's a place to shoot a film because it's exotic and beautiful and interesting from a Western perspective. Are there any moves for Thai movie makers, Thai filmmakers to go to Europe or to the United States and to film Thai-focused, character-driven films, but in foreign locations rather than the opposite?
As for the Thai production themselves, it's not that easy. I think, you know, you think this way, the reason the European, the Chinese, or the American come to Thailand because, first of all, dollar goes a long way here, especially right now. Yeah. So, you know, we don't have what we call union like you guys do. Things is easier here in Thailand, you know, and less expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
But if for Thai to go somewhere like Europe or America, the investment has to be so big. And the project,
that makes sense.
I'm not trying to say, you know, here we walk longer hour, blah, blah, blah. It's less, it's more in Thai because sabai mean easy going here. You know, when you're in a production, people help each other. They don't say, hey, this is not my job, this is your job, blah, blah, blah. The attitude of working is different. So maybe there's some scene that they will go and shoot, but probably not the whole movie because it's get quite complicated when you go to
that makes sense.
But here in Thailand, we have more like open to the international market. Mm-hmm. Just think about, you know, shooting a Thai movie in New York City and have to get the permission from the NYPD and the city and, you know,
very
get
true.
The equipment to go into the state, paying the
permits and fees and taxes.
Yeah.
You've worked with various directors and actors throughout your career. Are there any collaborations that stand out to you that have been particularly rewarding or influential to you?
Oh, again, I think I have to say Nicholas changed my entire, I said, Nicholas changed my life. Only God Forgive changed my life. It's a springboard to my future. People still, you know, when people come to Thailand, like a director come to Thailand, the first thing they will have this little picture of Chang in their pocket and said, where is this guy? You know? And the film has been around 10 years, you know, already, or more than 10 years. And people still want to, you know, now, you know, I'm so grateful that sometime I just got a job by, you know, they said, hey, I'd like you to be in our film. Because, you know, some director said, you know, I saw your film when I was a film student, and I'm dying to work. You know, some people, they respect that character, they respect that movie, they respect my acting so much that, you know, I feel like I have people who already admire my work. You know, I have some fan in the state that it's a bit over the top that he tattooed my face on his forearm.
No really? Way!
Wow.
And he sent me the picture. I said, that was very nice of you, but what would your father think?
Permanent now.
Well, that's how you know you've made it. That's how you know you've made it, Pooh. If someone's tattooing your image for the rest of their lives.
People send Lego set to me with my character and Ryan and Christina, I understand, but cool. With a tattoo, you know, on their arm or the name of the movie on their forehead, it's a bit, you know, extreme. But I always grateful for that. But I, like I said, you know, when you think about, you know, of course, there are a couple of Thai movies that also I felt that I learned a lot from it, and I guess changed my life as well. You know, like The Last Executioner, I won Best Actor in Shanghai.
Yes.
And that's how the Chinese market found out about me. And, you know, in some projects, I just do it because I love the character, I like the director, you know, and you never know what's going to happen. I feel like, you know, there must be a reason why I'm here after the age of 50. And I can tell you why, because besides the opportunity to do what I love is that I can encourage other people that said, hey, it's never too late. Don't give up. You know, if you're now running from audition to another audition, still taking classes, you know, dealing with working 2-3 jobs, struggling, you know what, keep doing it, you know, dance until it rains. I mean, if you're the rain dancer, you don't stop. You have to dance until it rains. For me now, if I have an opportunity to support other actors or introduce them to, you know, any other, you know, projects that interesting, that's it. You know, I want to do this thing because I feel so fortunate that I'm I have this opportunity to do what I'm doing.
Well, I'm pretty sure there's an official statistic somewhere that says for every one person who tattoos your face on their body, there are thousands others who are moved by your performance and inspired by you. So, I mean, you've already made a huge dent in the world. So that's pretty good.
And I think you just have to work harder. It's no best job. You know, I cannot just keep talking about only God who gives. People talk about it the rest of my life. It's funny because my son went to study in UK, actually during COVID time, and he got stuck there, you know, and, you know, hang out with friends and that stuff. And then, you know, when he mentioned to his, colleagues or, you know, college friends that, you know, that his dad is an actor, and they all, you know, kind of laugh. So, yeah, we don't see Thai movie much, but we like this movie, Only God Forgives. And my son would say, that's my dad. And they would go like,
That's pretty cool. Okay, so we have to ask, what was it like working with Ryan Gosling?
Wonderful. Okay. I think one of my most favorite. I mean, I have many most favorite actors, but he's one of them. I remember the first time we met, it was during the ceremony. I mean, Thailand, before you open a project, you have this ceremony of praying and, you know, in front of the Ganesh, the Hindu god. So we did, there's a lot of chanting and stuff. So that was the first time I met him. He was, you know, wearing the dark sunglasses, sitting, praying. I thought he was half asleep. I don't know. I was afraid to start the conversation. The first time, I was introduced. And then all of a sudden, he turned around, looked at me, he said, "Phew, I've heard you make a good Pad Thai noodle."
Wow. Your reputation precedes you.
So I said, not bad, but if you like to try it, you might have to come to my house. He said, "Okay, I make sure I come to your house." And he kept his promise. I made him Pad Thai. Wow. But beside that, you know, when you said Ryan Gosling, what do you hear after that? Oh, I love everybody that heard the name would say, "Wow, what a great actor! What a great person!" Mm-hmm. And he was—he was just genuine, no big deal. No, he's not arrogant. He's just ordinary. He sat on the, you know, on the, you know, somewhere in a, you know, on the curve of the street eating chicken basil and his brown rice. Yeah. You know, he has to have chicken basil every meal. Very easy going. You know, when Perfect. We did the fight scene was tough. And what you see, 2 minutes of fight scene take 2 or 3 days because we don't use stunt. You know, when we make mistake, we get hurt. When he fell down or when when he hit me by mistake, we just keep going. Mm-hmm. Just keep rolling. There's no, you know, big deal. Very professional.
You mentioned that you've got several favorite actors. I'm wondering if you have a favorite film.
That I work with?
Of any film from anywhere in the world. What's your favorite film? What's your your favorite?
It's interesting because when I was in the States, right? I love watching movies. I never thought one day I would be an actor, right? So I just, you know, I live in the States during the 80s, and I go to cinema. I love movies that inspire people, like, the right stuff, you know, about the Apollo project. Yeah. I like, Robert Redford, The Natural, the basketball movie. If you remember that. Of course, As Good As It Gets is always one of my top.
That is a great one.
Okay. I love Christopher Walken, Dead Zone. I think Dead Zone was like also what Stephen King.
Oh, Dead Zone is fantastic with the Stephen King movie.
Wow. Okay.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Yeah, so Walken's
thing. Yeah. We talk about in the 80s or 90s. And funny enough, I was watching Dead Zone on Thai television one night before I flew to New York. And I said to my wife, "Oh my God, I love Dead Zone." And, you know, it was a rerun on the TV, so I watched the movie. And we flew to New York. We got to JFK, took the cab to 100th Street, Broadway. I got off from my cab, Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken is walking.
Christopher Walken was walking. That's perfect. That's perfect.
How coincident. Christopher Walken was walking. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, a movie like that, I think it's always, you know, that I enjoy.
What are two or three colleagues that you've worked with? Can you name names? Some of your favorite people that you've worked with, whether they're local to Bangkok, Thailand, or from elsewhere? You know,
well, first of all, I think about after 15 years, I think I have official and unofficial projects on IMDb, I think more than 70 projects now. I work with about 18 nationality different, the director. Mm-hmm. I think I count down by 18 nationalities. I had a chance to work in Australia, of course, for the 13 Lives with Ron Howard. But I'm only there for few scenes, but then I have to be there the whole 2.5 months because of COVID, you know, nobody can travel, like, you know, in and out of Australia easily. But I remember in that film, the moment that I was very touched was that, you know, the lead actor were Colin Farrell and Viggo Mortensen.
Oh, right.
Oh, from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. And there was a scene where, you know, I came in, I gave a permission to, you know about 13 Lives, about a cave rescue in Thailand. And I played the Minister of Interior, Thailand Minister of Interior, who gave the permission to use the drugs to rescue. It's a basic scene when I walk into the meeting room. I said, okay, you're allowed to go in, blah, 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 start the mission. And there's a scene where I look at all the people. Of course, Vico's there, Colin Farrell's there with other actors. And then after that scene, it's a scene where somebody have to feed the line or do the eye line for me, right? You know, the rest of the team, they said, oh, you're done. Only Pooh stay on set because he had to say this dialogue. And of course, everybody left, right? Because they can just go straight to the hotel. They don't have to wait, you know, the van's ready.
Yeah.
Colin said, hey, I'm going to wait. I'm going to feed the eye light to Pooh.
Oh, that's cool.
That's classy.
Don't worry. Really I'm, nice. I'm standing next to the camera. You know, sometimes they bring the AD or PA, whatever, or they do this. Okay, this is Colin eye light, you know what I mean? And he said, no, I'm staying. And then
did
the scene. And, you know, it was exactly, I would do that to everyone anyway. You know, for me, I never have, you know, I always stand there to do eyeline for people. And for Colin Farrell to do that for me, I was so touched. That's how professional he was. I was so touched by that.
Yeah.
And Vico was so down to earth. Everybody, you know, he loves people from Thailand. We hung out, we do a Thai dinner. You know, I think people need to know the story. Besides, you know, of course, they're A-lister or they're so up there. But when they work, they make sure that the working environment is for everybody. You know, to feel comfortable.
Right.
And I think, and also for the Thai, especially for me, I respect everybody. I walk in and I want to make sure that they respect me the same way they see me or without me around. You know, and the best thing to do is that you respect other people. The same, you know. So if you want to be respect, you have to keep respect.
Right, that makes sense. Just like so for me, as interesting and unique as it is, although you guys are doing a unique kind of work, what you just described is the ideal for any work environment. If you want respect, you've got to treat others with kindness and respect. Him, Colin, staying behind and helping you, he gained your respect just by being kind to you. So, yeah, it just sounds...
Yeah, he probably do this all the time anyway. But at that time, for me, it was just I didn't expect that, you know...
It's above and beyond.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a pleasure to have you on with us. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us on a Saturday morning. We really, really appreciate it. It's been so fun to get to know you more and to learn your philosophy and hear about your experiences. I am so excited to see what comes next. So real quick, you mentioned a musical of all things that's coming out. I'm imagining Chang running around chopping people in half, but singing a karaoke song while he's doing it.
Interesting because this project started during COVID as well. I have a good friend who a child actor, British child actor named Paul. I will send you his last name Paul Spurrier, who live in Thailand. I worked with two of his projects, and he said during COVID, he didn't have anything to do. And so he wrote a story, and he wrote 22 songs, even though he doesn't know anything about music.
Wow.
But then after that, he connected with people in the industry, a lot of young talented Thai composer, and they came up with 22 songs for the movie. And we shot the first part 2 weeks ago in the north part of Thailand. Beautiful location. But again, it's not a typical Christmas movie. It's going to have some drama, some social issue, which is also interesting because, you know, people think that when Christmas time comes, it's all about, candy and, gingerbread man. But this is something
trust me, we do not need more of the same kind of Christmas films. We have thousands of them, literally. It's the same rubbish over and over again. So I'm excited to have something outside of the norm.
We're definitely ready for something new.
Hopefully Dream will be different, because we are so excited about it too, first Thai musical in English. Then I have some project, hopefully, keeping my finger crossed, to go to India for my very first Bollywood.
That is awesome.
That's awesome.
A Joy Singaporean Thai coming to Thailand as well. A lot of things, French film, because Thailand is a hub for international production. But as for me also, I go out as well, like a year and a half ago, I had an opportunity to do my very first motion capture. I cannot tell you much, but soon, it will be quite interesting. It's a very unique,
top secret.
And it's quite a big project. And, to have another experience doing motion capture, it's wild.
Wow. Oh, this is going to be great.
Okay.
I might get a tattoo of your face on my chest or something. Who knows?
Get the tattoo sticker. At least you can,
Okay.
But Joe, you said your kids, they have some issue fighting all that stuff. Just let them watch Only God Forgives and tell them that if they don't behave themselves, Uncle Pooh would come, from Thailand and take care of them.
Take care of all of them. that would cure the problem.
I think if my kids watched you and Only God Forgives, they would spend years in therapy.
Very good chance of that.
Think about my son has to watch it all the time because,
Yeah.
Right. Well, Pooh, thank you so much for your time and your just wealth of knowledge about how you got into acting and your experiences working with internationally recognized talent. You are officially an internationally recognized talent of your own in your own right. We are big fans. We're going to remain big fans. I'm excited to follow your career, see what comes next. My goodness, when the next big thing comes out, we'd love to have you back.
Well, thank you so much for thinking of me. I mean, like I said, every talk, every interview for me is keep me excited and remind me what I'm doing, why I'm here. And like I said, also thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my story for you.
It's a great story. Well, we wish you all the best in everything that you're working on, which sounds like quite a bit. And we will be watching.
If you all want to know, I never build my Instagram account. So, with my long name, I think you can find it or put it on your podcast. I am welcoming friends. Okay. And I think it's time for me to start building my Instagram account after all these years. But anyway, it's always a pleasure to share my story.
Thank you.
Well, take care. And we will be watching and in touch.
You're very welcome. And have a good weekend.
Sawadee krap. Thanks so much.
Thank you. That was fantastic.
That was great.
I'm an enormous fan. It's a little easier now to be terrified of his character from Only God Forgives because the actor behind the man is so pleasant,
very warm,
and nice, and that's personal therapy. That helps me sleep better at night.
But he is a god, so you still have to be careful. It sounds like he has some really really cool projects coming up that I am stoked to see, especially a musical a Christmas musical in Thailand. That's going to be really cool. So,
and a motion capture film that is shrouded in secrecy that we can't talk about.
Can't know about it yet.
We don't know any details.
That's going to be interesting.
And a Bollywood film with a sounds like a fairly big budget for a Bollywood film.
He's a busy dude.
Yeah, he is. And he's filming all over the world.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, that's wow.
Well, big stuff to come. That's exciting. And we got a chance to talk with a national treasure. So
he is, yeah. Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, again, anybody who has their face tattooed on anybody's body is already icon status. So
well,
he's made it.
For what it's worth, Jared, I wasn't going to tell you this, but I do have a tattoo of you on my back. Life size, of course.
Yeah.
I think I got the dimensions of your head size just right. It's on my back.
Okay. Well, one day I'll have to see that.
No. You're supposed to say one day I'll return the favor and get your head tattooed on my back.
Yeah. One day. Exactly.
Okay. Good stuff.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for hanging with us. It's been a blast. Until next time, party on later.
Take care, you guys. Bye-bye.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah?
I know Pooh would have made these better, but what do you think of the pad thai noodles I made with fresh oysters that I cleaned myself?
It was really gritty. I almost finished it.